Apple Dragon, a Dan and Phil RPF podfic, written by Yes Yes Siobhan and read to you by Fins and Marshes for ITPE 2024. Yay! With additional tags, POV Outsider, Established Relationship, and Dan and Phil Terrible Influence Tour 2024-2025. When Cassie gets hired for the North American leg of the Terrible Influence Tour, she doesn't actually know who Dan and Phil are. She's done tours before, though. She's a good lighting technician, even though she's never been the chief lighting technician on a project and has mostly worked a stationary job in her hometown's theatre the past couple of years. And she does like travelling and getting paid properly, and it's been 4 years since the last time she was hired for a tour. So when her friend and former colleague Angie calls her and tells her she might have a cool job and where to send her application, Cassie doesn't think about it for very long. They hire her without much back and forth, and the job itself seems pretty straightforward and similar enough to the ones she's worked before. The only unusual thing is that they ask her how she feels about queer people during the hiring process, but she's queer herself and understands that with the current political landscape, they might want to check in on that before hiring her onto a travelling staff. And Angie says they're nice, just openly gay, and so Cassie shrugs it off. She really couldn't care less about the sexualities of her employers. She meets Dan and Phil for the first time 2 days before the North American leg of their tour properly starts. She hasn't really done much research on them. She thought about it and then ultimately decided that she'd rather go in without preconceived notions and deliver exactly what they ask her to, not what her impression of their videos makes her think they might actually want. They're both extremely tall, but they seem just as friendly in person as they did over Zoom during the job interview, and they're a bit all over the place, but clear enough in what they want from their lighting technicians. And some of their staff have already done the European leg with them, apparently, and thus know exactly what feel they're going for in the show, which always helps. "It's been super long since I last travelled on a tour bus," Cassie tells one of the other staff members, Sarah, on the first day of travel, just before the bus is about to leave, and Sarah grins at her. "It's going to be fun," Sarah says. "Also, you're going to feel so fucking single." Cassie blinks. "That's not really what I expected you to say. Wait, how did you know I was single?" "Doesn't matter if you are or not," Sarah says. "I have a girlfriend and they still make me feel single." "Okay," Cassie says. "Any helpful advice on the show?" "Don't stick around close to the dressing rooms afterwards," Sarah says ominously, and Cassie decides against pointing out that she meant her job. Cassie wakes up 4 times during the first night, with considerable trouble getting back to sleep, and thinks to herself that actually, the thing Sarah should have warned her about is that either Dan or Phil snores horrendously. She's on her second coffee by the time the snoring finally stops. Just minutes later, Phil stumbles into the tour bus kitchen, bleary-eyed behind his glasses with sleep-mussed hair, and starts pouring himself a coffee without so much as acknowledging her. "Good morning," she says anyway, just because she was raised to be polite, and he grumbles back something unintelligible. "Don't bother talking to him before he's had his coffee," Dan says, from the entrance to the kitchen area. His eyes sweep through the kitchen, like he's trying to judge whether he can squeeze himself in with them. "All right," Cassie says, storing that information away. Phil grumbles something into his coffee, and Dan's face lights up with an expression so fond it feels almost wrong to look at, cheeks dimpling, eyes crinkling up. He does squeeze into the kitchen area, then, despite the lack of space, and knocks his shoulder into Phil's. "Morning, brat," he tells Phil. "Are you making enough coffee for me, too?" Phil leans into Dan's side, the movement so fluid and immediate it seems to be almost automatic, and Cassie decides she really doesn't need to take up space in the kitchen, of all places, and squeezes through to the lounge, where Sarah, Amber, and Ben look up from their card game to laugh at her. Phil and Dan wander into the lounge not much later, both of them with coffee in their hands. They sit down next to each other. They seem to be subconsciously leaning into each other's space, which is something Cassie would rather not think about because it does make her feel extremely single. She's starting to understand where Sarah was coming from. "How was your first night on the bus?" Phil asks her, nicely. His energy levels have shifted significantly with coffee in his system and Dan directly next to him. Cassie says, the only one in the lounge who hasn't travelled with them before, uncertain if it's rude to mention that your employer snores so loudly it sounds like he's trying to fell trees with his vocal cords. This wasn't an issue on the past tours she was on, certainly, although she's starting to think that might have been sheer dumb luck. There are many men who snore that loudly, probably. She wouldn't really know. Dan laughs at her, not unkindly. It's fine, you can say that Phil is a terrible person to sleep in the same bus with. We've had noise complaints before. Hey, Phil says. I'm not that bad. You sort of are, Ben says, looking up from where he's handily beating Amber at a travel version of Battleship after having defeated all of them at Uno. D10. Fuck, Amber murmurs. That's another hit. You sound like you're trying to cause an avalanche, Dan tells Phil. It's horrible. I'll avalanche you, Phil says, which might be the worst comeback Cassie has ever heard, and makes Dan crack up with a really loud laugh. What sort of threat is that? He says, putting a hand on Phil's shoulder. He has to slightly lean back to do it, so far into Phil's space is he. Cassie is starting to feel like she shouldn't be present for this. Perhaps Mary's decision of staying in her bunk instead of settling in the lounge was the smarter choice. She looks at Sarah, who mouths fucking single at her. She definitely gets it now. They arrive at the venue only half an hour later, and things settle into normalcy. She goes to get breakfast with the rest of the crew, and Dan and Phil tag along to the cafe. They don't sit down to eat with the rest of them, but rather take their food and drinks and go, waving cheerfully as they leave. The first tour Cassie was on, the artist, a middle-aged country singer, almost never spent any time with the crew. On her second tour, the members of the small punk band she was touring with hung out with the staff a lot, always up for a laugh and a chat. So far, Dan and Phil seem to be settling into a sort of middle ground she doesn't exactly mind. Do they usually eat by themselves? She asks, mostly out of curiosity. Yeah, they need time to recharge by themselves. Believe me, it's better for everyone involved when they get it, Sarah says. Ben grimaces in a way Cassie tries not to think about. Okay, Cassie says, feeling like she's gotten way more information than she needed. Sometimes they come out for pub evenings, though, Amber says. Cool, Cassie says. Different question, Amber says. Do we have time for a Battleship rematch after breakfast? Because I desperately need to get revenge. The evening's show goes off without a hitch. It's fun, too. Cassie enjoys the work very much, and she's filled with adrenaline and extreme delight after. Dan and Phil, too, are clearly filled with adrenaline and delight. Phil almost trips into her backstage as she and the crew are starting to pack up, only saved by Dan's hand on his waist. Sorry, I'm very clumsy. Kind of like a newborn cow in the body of a person, Phil says, and grins at her. Cassie tries not to think too hard about that metaphor. Good job on the lights, they looked sick. They did, you all did an incredible job, Dan says, his hand still on Phil's waist. Thank you, Cassie says, beaming at them. Phil is beaming back. Dan isn't looking at her. His eyes are on Phil. We'll get out of your hair for now, he says, still staring at Phil, his gaze intent and heated. Yeah, Phil says. See you later on the bus. Later, Cassie says, watching as Dan's hand slides to the small of Phil's back, pushing him gently in the direction of the dressing rooms. His eyes are still on Phil. Even from here, his expression looks hungry. Abruptly, she understands Sarah's warning and decides to heed it. Cassie gets used to Phil snoring, mostly because Sarah tells her to invest in good earplugs, which is such a simple and smart solution she can't believe she didn't think of it herself. She sleeps well after that purchase, usually waking up well rested. While her own eye bags recede by the fourth venue, earplugs and an adjustment to touring settling into a sleep schedule that works pretty well for her, Dan and Phil's seem to get worse. Out of the two of them, Phil is usually the first to rise in the morning, and generally tends to be unapproachable before his first coffee. It's easy enough to deal with him, with that information stored away. He's a bit clumsy and scattered, and tends towards motion sickness, but he's well organized with important things, and doesn't mind helping out where needed, which she appreciates. Dan usually gets up shortly after Phil, and makes Phil's coffee for him about half of the time. He's nice, with a dry sense of humour Cassie doesn't always get but finds generally funny, and the amount of energy with which he engages in social interaction seems to wildly fluctuate depending on the time of day and how close by Phil is. They, too, are clearly settling in to living on a tour bus. Still, it's very apparent they don't seem to be getting enough sleep. She thinks about asking about it, but decides it's ultimately none of her business, however blurry the line of professionality might get when living on the same bus. They decide to go out to a bar after the fifth show. They have one more tour bus night ahead, and then a couple of nights in a hotel room before it's back to the tour bus. They squeeze into a booth, and Cassie orders a beer and is slightly distracted by the waitress, who is extremely hot and shoots her a wink as she leaves. She's always had a thing for femme women with long, curly hair, and she's still so horrible at flirting she doesn't usually even attempt it, even now at 29. In the corner of the booth, Dan and Phil sit close together, pressed shoulder to shoulder, even though there's definitely enough space for them to not need to do so. Phil has ordered some sort of extremely sweet-looking virgin cocktail, and Dan's cocktail has a dragon carved out of an apple perching on the rim of the glass. "Oh, I'm so jealous. That's so much cooler than mine," Phil tells Dan, pouting. "Well, clearly I have superior taste," Dan says, laughing at him. "I want a dragon too," Phil complains. He doesn't seem like a man closer to 40 than 30 when he pouts like that, Cassie thinks. Dan rolls his eyes at him and says, "You should have ordered something different then. You're so whiny." He also, in a display so smitten Cassie refuses to believe it's happening right in front of her eyes, takes the little apple dragon off his glass and perches it on Phil's, who smiles at Dan blindingly and says, "Yes!" in a delighted voice, poking the dragon with a finger. "Careful, you'll end up destroying it and then neither of us will have a dragon," Dan tells him, grabbing Phil's wrist and drawing his hand away from the glass. It's so sickeningly sweet, Cassie thinks about giving flirting with the waitress a go, after all. They get back to the tour bus shortly after midnight. They had a deadline of 1 a.m, and Phil was adamant about not cutting it too close, although that might just have been because he was starting to drop where he sat. Cassie has just settled in comfortably in her bunk when she realizes she doesn't know where her earplugs are. She rummages around for them, but they're not anywhere in her bunk. She thinks about getting up to look for them, but it's late and she doesn't want to disturb anyone, and Phil hasn't started properly snoring yet, although a particularly loud breath is escaping from his bunk every now and then. If she manages to fall asleep now, before he properly starts, she might be lucky and not be too disturbed. She has just fallen asleep when a rustling noise wakes her. She presses her face into her pillow, hoping to get back to sleep. But the rustling noise doesn't stop, and is now underlined with actual snoring from Phil on top of it. Someone's climbing out of their bunk, she thinks, disgruntled at her foiled attempt at sleeping. Only then it sounds like maybe someone's climbing into a bunk, and then she hears a quiet, "Phil, hey." Phil lets out a particularly loud snore before the sound stutters and ebbs away. "What?" Cassie hears. "Make space," the first voice says. It sounds like Dan. Phil grumbles something, and then there's the sound of more rustling. "These bunks are too small for two people," probably Dan complains. "You have your own," Phil says, sleepily slurring his words. "Ugh," Dan says. "No." Even more rustling. I don't get how you sleep well in these. I don't, Phil says. He's starting to sound more alert. Cassie, too, is feeling more alert by the second, and really wishes she weren't. Your snoring would indicate something else, Dan says. There's a quiet sound of a wet smack and a pleased little hum.
You love it,
Phil replies, cutting himself off with a yawn. For a moment, there's silence, and Cassie almost gets her hopes up. Then, yeah, probably couldn't sleep at all without it. Shut up, shut up! Didn't even say anything. Well, you thought it, stop thinking it! Dan's voice rises in pitch. The sound of Phil shushing Dan. Quiet, Dan, you're gonna wake someone. Thanks for noticing, Cassie thinks, trying to bury her face in her pillow again. Sorry, sorry, Dan says, tragically still not being quiet. More rustling than the sound of a satisfied sigh. Better, Dan says, sounding pleased. Missed this. Needy, Phil says. His voice sounds slightly slurred again, on the precipice of sleep. Rat. Bitch. Phil's voice is almost inaudible, barely awake. Cassie, in a fit of desperation, presses the pillow over her head. If she doesn't fall asleep again before Phil starts snoring again, she'll never manage to get any proper sleep. Fuck, I can't wait for the hotel room tomorrow. I'm gonna sleep like a fucking king. Another smacking noise. Then, finally, blessed silence. Cassie relaxes. Phil starts snoring. Do we have time for shopping? I'm going to need to buy new earplugs, Cassie tells Sarah the next morning, stumbling blearily into the lounge. And backups for the backups. Why are we out of coffee? Sarah laughs at her. We should be at the venue in 10 minutes, she says. We can get you coffee and earplugs then. Good, Cassie groans. Also, I want a girlfriend. Fuck! It's nice, though, she thinks later that day, when she finally gives in to her curiosity and watches some of their videos alone in her hotel room, compares the careful distance of two boys with straight fringes to the men squeezing themselves into a single-person bunk bed on a shared tour bus because going another night without shared space was too much, even with a hotel stint coming up. Not good for her desire to get 8 hours of sleep, maybe. But nice. The end. Thank you for listening.